Hello, and welcome to another edition of the 66 to 87 podcast. Tom Reed here, along with Dave Molinari, and a little bit later, we will be joined by Tariq El-Bashir from The Athletic and also from Turner Sports, and we'll be discussing the Washington Capitals, the Penguins' big rivalry, and where that team is headed here in the next year or so, for kind of similar tracks to where I think where the Penguins find themselves in, and a similar track that has to be engineered, so to speak, by the general manager and the president of hockey operations, Dave, Ron Hextall and Brian Burke. It's been about 8 months since these guys joined the organization after the kind of surprising news that Jim Rutherford was stepping down. And I thought it would be a good time as we get ready to start this season. It gets going this week. We have the Devo camp over the weekend. And then what, Dave, the 22nd, is that right? Coming to the training camp that's going?
22nd for photos and physicals. Actual first day on the ice is the 23rd.
Okay. This will be kind of the last step in Burke and Hextall's time with the team. In other words, they've done everything else. They've kind of gone through a regular season, didn't have a training camp, went through a regular season, went through a trade deadline, went through a draft such that it was with the few picks that they had, and they went through free agency. And we know there's not a whole lot of movement over this summer. Some fans were wondering, oh, is there going to be more? Is there going to be more? Well, not much has happened since then. Dave, I want you I want to get your thoughts on the job that they have done from the day that they've gotten here till now. How have they done as far as kind of running this team?
Well, their time in charge has been a lot less eventful than I would have predicted that it would be back when they were hired. I understand there have been certain constraints, because of things like limited salary cap space. But I really thought they would change the roster more than they have, mostly because both of them have been pretty adamant since they arrived about wanting to add some more size and muscle to their group. And, they really haven't done that. And, as of the time we are recording this, I think they are a lesser team than they were, at the end of their playoff series against the Islanders. So in addition to the players, I think the guys in the front office have a lot of work ahead of them.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. I do think that they are in as unenviable position as you can be in with two future Hall of Famers still on your roster, because normally when a job like this comes open, it means the team has probably bottomed out normally. And that means a general manager, a coach have been swept out, or it means they have failed. They were unable to make any deep playoff runs anymore. That really wasn't the case here, even though it was, I think we both agree that it has been kind of going downhill for the last couple years. I don't think that's a stretch. I think the one big move that they made in acquiring, their biggest move has been a good one in Jeff Carter. And again, that's not a huge move, but I think that helped them win a division title last year. And I think he was their best player in the playoffs. And with the Crosby injury right away this season, at least it gives them someone that they know that can kind of maybe move in to the center ice position if they have to and fill one of those roles. Your thoughts on was unquestionably their biggest move to this point.
Yeah, it was their biggest, and certainly if every move would work out as well as that one has, maybe they would actually be able to rebuild and reload at the same time.
Yeah.
Which those objectives are at cross purposes. It's kind of tough to get better right now at the same time as you're getting better for the future. Hextall definitely hit a home run or at least an extra base hit with that one. Uh, But, you know, it's the only trade of real consequence that he's been involved with. I don't think, you know, bringing in Mark Friedman, you know, is of the same magnitude. And, you know, there were guys came in and departed via free agency, but that, you know, that's going to happen every year. As I said, I expected more activity. There still is a chance to do that. You know, he still has way over a month before the season starts, and then you don't really have to have your roster finalized until the trade deadline, assuming you're not out of playoff contention by the time the deadline gets here. You know, so there is time, and I'm not a fan of making trades for the sake of making trades. I think you should only do it if you think you're making your team better, whether it's now or in the future. But I certainly did expect him to do more. We don't know how much he's tried to do, you know, behind the scenes that we just haven't been privy to finding out about. You know, he doesn't make a habit of sharing his plans with people on the outside. But, you know, now that he has a pretty good sense of what he has in the organization, and he should certainly have a better one, you know, at the conclusion of this camp, after he's seen a lot of the better prospects who are in the pipeline, perhaps we'll see him get a little more aggressive on the trade front.
Did you think, you know, the story, and we've talked about it a lot since the short playoff run ended, did you think that they would try to make a move for a goaltender? Because that's been one of the stories. And we've had guests on the show that go back and forth on this. Yes, they should really be looking for a veteran to bring in there to at least be, if not a 1A, 1B, somebody that's at least pushing him, someone that they can use a lot. And we've had other people that say, look, give this guy another shot, Tristan Jarry, another shot at the playoffs. What is your thought on the way that Hextall and Burke have approached to this point, taking that latter route?
I'm probably in the latter camp. I think they did check out the market for goaltenders, and I think they should have checked out the market for goaltenders. Sure. I think you'd be remiss if you're a GM who doesn't try to see if you can improve yourself at every position. It's kind of hard to argue with their logic that Tristan Jarry had a generally very strong regular season. There were certainly some hiccups early and, you know, a few others over the course of the season, but that's going to happen with almost any goaltender. And, you know, he played very well for them. He finished, 25 wins he had, I believe. He finished top five in the league in victories. I don't know that I would have brought in a guy to challenge him for the top spot. I think that, you know, having somebody who could have been perceived as a threat, I'm not sure that any good necessarily would have come of that. And I think Casey DeSmith is a perfectly capable backup. I think that, you know, if you're going to sink or swim with Jarry, that, you know, there's no need to, you know, explore replacements for DeSmith. I think he'll be, you know, perfectly fine in that role.
All right. We are just getting started here on the 66 to 87 podcast. We get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Chris Letang and talk a little bit about development camp. And, you know, obviously right now, some of these guys, we're not going to be seeing them in the NHL for a while if we're going to see them. But there are certain guys that have something to prove. Dave wrote a little bit about that last week, and we're going to address that when we return on the 66 to 87 podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast here on the PK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Dave, the TJ Watt watch is over. Signed, played, had an awesome first game. Are we to the point where a Chris Letang watch needs to start as far as when is this extension that we all expect going to get done? Is there any thought cause for concern, or it's just going to happen when it happens?
I don't think there's any urgency to get a deal done. I don't think that when training camp opens next week that you'll see Chris Letang only kind of participate on his own and not in some of the drills with his teammates the way they, is done in football occasionally. From all indications, both sides would like to get a deal done. That doesn't mean that working one out will be easy. It doesn't mean that they will see eye to eye on how long the deal should be, or even what the range of money should be. But it's not as if they have to have this done by opening night, or any looming deadline. So I'm sure that these negotiations, like those with Brian Rust and Evgeny Malkin, are on Ron Hextall's to-do list, but I don't know that they necessarily have to be at the top of that list.
Dave, who's the point man for something like that in this new organization? Who actually does the negotiating? A lot of times it's not the general manager that's kind of working on this. For the Penguins now, who handles that?
I don't know. There haven't been any contracts of consequence really, negotiated with returning players from inside the organization. I suspect that the parameters of the deal are established, by a group, Burke and Hextall and probably some of the financial people. As far as who would actually be involved in the day-to-day give and take with a player's agent under this particular management team, I really couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I do want to go back to one point in our first segment, because you made a big point, and I didn't mean to slough it off. I said I agreed with you. But we looked around the league, and we saw the Rangers go out and address, I don't want to say a similar need, but to get bigger. We saw, some will say they went over the top in trying to prove their toughness. But I guess the point was, those players, kind of players, were available. And as you mentioned, Burke and Hextall from day one talked about the need to get this team bigger. You get any sense of why they haven't been able to pull the trigger on maybe a second or third line guy that could add some of that snarl that they're kind of looking for?
I'm guessing that the salary cap constraints are the biggest thing. They only have about $120,000 in cap space, which is way below the league minimum. So you would have to shed a similar or larger contract,
right?
In any deal to bring in a guy. I'm sure that ties their hands to some degree, but I don't want to take away from the fact that I'm surprised that they haven't found a way to bring in some of that size and muscle that they've made it clear that they would like to add.
Yeah, I think in some ways you don't want to do what the Rangers did, in my opinion, with this team, because it is still a pretty good team. You don't want to give away a guy like Pavel Buchnevich just to bring in a draft pick and a third or fourth line guy just to bring him in to say, we've got that. But you do want to try to, again, if that's one of your objectives, to bring it in, because we've seen it. We've seen it has been a bit of an issue. It wasn't as big of an issue as Tristan Jarry, but in the last couple of years, we have seen teams winning the cups that have been very balanced, that that have some talent and also have that snarl. And that is not something that has been part of the of this team the last couple years. So I didn't mean to bring that back up, but I did. You were so strong on that point earlier. I did want to at least expand on that a little bit. If you're listening this weekend or just early in this coming week, you know the development camp is going on, and Dave wrote a kind of a nice piece on some of the guys that really need to really kind of to stand out a little bit to make their mark during this abbreviated camp. Dave, can you shed some light on some of these guys that the Penguins are maybe will be looking to kind of take that next step?
Well, the guy that I'm particularly looking forward to seeing is Philip Hollander, who they got from got back from Toronto in the Jared McCann trade.
Right.
I was very impressed with him during his first go round with the Penguins, and wasn't entirely in favor of surrendering him in the trade that brought Kasperi Kapanen back to Pittsburgh.
Right.
But it will be interesting to see how Hollander, who has played in the top league in Sweden for the past three seasons, how quickly he's able to get acclimated to the North American rink and the North American game. Because, you know, I think he, you know, if he is able to make that adjustment relatively quickly, I think there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be close to NHL ready. I don't see him. He's not going to be a game breaker. He's probably not going to be a top line guy, but I could see him fitting into a nice, productive middle six role here. The only question being whether that is sooner or later.
Yeah, and certainly, and we know that GMs are always supposed to be high on anyone that they bring in, but certainly Hextall spoke of that way, that this kid was going to get a look this fall to maybe make his way onto the roster, maybe not at the beginning, but certainly going to get a shot at some point here in the winter.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably you could find Patrick Alvin's fingerprints all over that trade. He was in the organization during Hollander's first go round here, whereas obviously Hextall was not. So I'm guessing that Patrick Alvin, was lobbying pretty hard to make sure that Hollander was included in the McCann trade.
Okay, for those of the listeners, who haven't read your story, who were a couple of the other guys? At least maybe you can give a quick synopsis on a couple of the other guys that you're looking at.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to forgive anybody who hasn't read the story and committed it to memory. But on the off chance that such a person exists, the other three players that I singled out, there were two defensemen and one other forward. Defenseman who I'm going to be particularly interested in seeing how he's progressed is Josh Maniscalco, who, when he was signed out of Arizona State a year or so ago, people had really high expectations for him. I think largely because of how well John Marino performed in his rookie season, and that probably some people got the impression that it was realistic to expect that from every defenseman who was fresh out of college. Maniscalco did not adapt to the pro game nearly as quickly as Marino did, but I'll be interested to see what kind of progress he has made over the course of the last year, and to get a sense of just how far away from the NHL he is. The other defenseman that I'm looking forward to getting a look at is Cam Lee. He's 24. He has a good offensive game. He has the unfortunate or misfortune of being a left shot, and the Penguins have no shortage of those on their defense. So, you know, it would probably take some injuries or trades or something of that sort to have him move up significantly on the depth chart. But it does seem like he's a guy who could contribute at the NHL level at some point, assuming his progress doesn't plateau. And finally, the other guy is Jonathan Gruden, who they got from Ottawa in the Matt Murray trade last year. Projects as a bottom six guy, hard worker, very smart. Or good hockey sense, which, you know, his dad is an assistant coach with the Islanders and played defense in the NHL. So I guess that's not a complete surprise. You often expect coaches' sons to have a pretty good handle on the nuances of the game. But, you know, it will be interesting to see, you know, whether he will, figure into the Penguins' plans in the long term. I don't see him making a serious push for a job in this camp, but he does seem like a guy who, if his career trajectory stays the same, will get here at some point in the future.
Well, when you said coach's son and John Gruden, I thought it might have been the Raiders coach that was coming in. He did not strike me as a hockey dad, but he would be quite Chucky would be quite the dad for anybody. You get your son fired up. All right. When we come back, we will be joined by Tarik El Bashir. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast, and we are delighted to be joined by Tarik El Bashir. You can read his fine work on The Athletic, and now he's joining the Turner Broadcasting Hockey. Of course, you guys know Turner they're going to be their first year, and Tarik, you were saying you're going to be kind of a utility infielder. We'll see you just a little bit of everywhere, huh, on coverage.
Yeah, that's certainly the plan for right now. I think there'll be some times where I'm at the glass and some times where I'll be doing interviews between periods. And, you know, I think we're going to try and play to some of my strengths. And, you know, that would be sit down interviews and other types of kind of longer form things. I've got a little TV in my past. I've been a sports writer for, 25 years, but I've done some broadcasting quite a bit when I worked for NBC Sports Washington. Decent stuff for NHL Network as well, so I'm familiar with the camera. But we'll see how it goes. But I think utility infielder is a very good way of putting my job description here.
Well, obviously you have been around for a long time in the Washington market. You've seen this Sid and Ovi rivalry play out. I don't know how you felt yesterday, the last couple of days, but I kind of got a smile on my face when I saw them doing the NHL media day kind of together.
Yeah.
Sid saying he hopes that Ovi does break Gretzky's record.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you and Dave both have seen so much of this rivalry over the years. Kind of what's made it special for you in your eyes with Ovechkin and Crosby?
You know, Tom, I had the same feeling that you had yesterday. The Capitol sent out a picture of the two, 30 something sitting there for an interview, and you can see Ovi's gray hair, and Sid doesn't look like a kid anymore. And I was like, oh my God, where has the time gone? And then Alex Ovechkin just turned 36 years old.
Yeah.
Where has the time gone? And just like most relationships, theirs has evolved. I mean, they hated each other early on. I mean, they could not have been more diametrically opposed in terms of how they lived their lives, in terms of how they approached the game, in terms of how they played the game. Alex was flamboyant and gave the Russian machine never break kind of type quotes. And, you know, Sidney Crosby was always very reserved and let his game do the talking. And you know, I remember though that Dave, you probably were at this game, the one where Ovi and Crosby kind of got tangled up and they were yelling at each other back and forth from the benches, and Ovi stood up and did like the chicken, you know, kind of like the chicken wings, like you're too chicken to fight me. And so they did not like each other early on, and now I think there's a deep respect and appreciation that has developed between the two. You know, both have won Stanley Cups. So obviously, Crosby has more rings than Alex does, but they both have reached the summit, and they know that they're in their last 5, 6, 7 years. Sid's probably got a few more, and now they're kind of in let's enjoy the ride mode. And I'm not so sure you would have seen the two of them sitting down and looking so easy and calm in that moment and comfortable in that moment as that picture that we saw yesterday of the two on set just kind of looked like they were kind of yucking it up a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Jump in there.
No, just I think that if it came down to it, if there was a game in progress and anything of consequence on the line, neither of them would hesitate to cut the heart out of the other.
I agree.
No matter how well they seem to get along at an NHL media gathering.
I agree.
A little bit like, although the guys I'm about to use were never really totally had total animosity about it, but it's kind of become a kind of a bird magic thing, right? Two guys that just recognize game. They've lifted the league. With Bird and Magic, they probably saved the league. And these two guys have just taken the sport. And I don't know when we'll see the rivalry like this again, to be honest with you. Two guys within the same division fighting for the same ice for like 17 years. It's been special. Let me ask you this. If you had to say now, won't either Sid or Ovi gets one more deep run, a playoff run, or maybe one more shot at the cup, is it the Penguins or is it the Capitals?
That's a tough question. I think both are trending in the wrong direction right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's honestly probably unlikely for either at this point. I think the teams are really kind of on similar tracks at the moment. The difference is the Penguins have 3 cups, during the Crosby era, and the Capitals have 1. Right? I mean, the Capitals are, several decades from now when they have their, their reunions, they're going to look back. I mean, it was, summoning the mountain was hard and getting that cup was great, but I think they're going to regret, maybe messing around early on in their careers and not getting it done early, which gets back to how those guys were wired, right? Sidney got one early in his career. Played for another early in his career. And they took Alex and his group a lot longer. I'll go with the Capitals, and I'm doing that because I know them better. Again, I really do think it's unlikely. But as we know, I mean, the NHL tournament is the most random of all in pro sports. I mean, it's a game played on ice with weird bounces and hot goaltenders and overtimes and all sorts of things that make this game so special. And I do think that if they're going to do it, if the Capitals are going to punch through one more time and take another run at it, it's got to happen here really quick, because the salary cap has really handcuffed them. Like it has a lot of teams. They haven't been able to add the pieces that they thought, several years ago when they were kind of looking at the plan, they haven't been able to add those pieces. Instead, they've been subtracting pieces to keep the big names in place. If you look at this year's team, it's not any better than last year's team. You could probably make the argument it's not quite as good as last year's team after losing Brendan Dillon. So it's going to be a challenge. I'm not really expecting either to make another run. I mean, for Capitals fans, we knew this was happening. This was the way it was going to go. We saw it happen the Kings. We saw it happen with the Blackhawks. We've seen it happen with the Penguins. The difference is those teams won multiple cups. Caps have one, right? So I think the next few years is going to be, and DC is going to be hoping to punch through one more time, but, you know, appreciating what Ovi has done and watching him track down number 99. Can he get there?
Right. You know, I think you make a good point, and Dave and I have talked about this before. And what we're really talking about is two aging cores, right? Two yeah. cores that have been very good, that pitched battles against each other, but they're aging. One other factor, though, I think people from the outside look at this, and especially as we've seen the Islanders rise up here in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say now that the Capitals made a mistake by letting Barry Trotz walk after winning the Cup?
You know, I think in retrospect, and that's always a dangerous thing because everything is, you know, so much clearer and obvious when you look back at decisions you made. And
sure.
I think people within the Capitals organization probably would have wished things had turned out differently. I do think that there was there were other layers. There were so many layers to what happened. It wasn't just simply the Caps going, we're not going to pay you all that money. You hit the road, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, Barry was hurt by how they had let him go into that season kind of as a lame duck and kind of twisting in the wind at various points in that season when they had struggles early on. You know, this is the year they won the Stanley Cup, but he almost got fired in November. I mean, that's well documented. I mean, there were some conversations early on. Hey, do we need to make a change here? So there was a lot of stuff going on, you know, in the coach's room. You know, some guys had extensions, some guys didn't have extensions. There was a lot of stuff that maybe we didn't know about at the time that we found out in retrospect. But, you know, and when you look at Barry Trotz, I mean, the day he resigned, there were pictures of him at the Newark airport, like that day, like he was already on his way to meeting Lou. Right. I mean,
right.
So again, I think the Capitals, and I've been told this by people, they wish cooler heads had prevailed, but they understand that it would have been really hard. It would have been really, really hard to convince him once things had unfolded the way they did to convince him to stay. And, you know, 5 years, $25 million, does that get it done? Does that keep him? Probably. It probably does, but I'm not the timing of it that might have needed to be made before the Cup as opposed to after the Cup. Like I said, there was just a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of ego, and you know, yeah. when it's a bunch of men trying to make decisions.
Yeah, I can remember. I can remember in the handshake line when they beat the Blue Jackets.
Blue Jackets, yeah.
And
I'm
he
out of here.
Basically said, he basically told Tortorella right there, I'm done yeah. after this.
Yeah.
So it was wide open even before they won the Cup. But I think Dave's got a question for you here.
Fire, yeah. Dave. Well, you don't have to go all the way back to the Barry Trotz era to remember a time when Evgeny Kuznetsov was really a core guy for the Capitals. His career seems to have largely gone off the tracks here over the past year or so, though. What's gone wrong for or with him?
Yeah, it's kind of a sad story as to, you know, what's happened here. Look, he's still a very good player. Is he elite anymore? I don't know. We saw it during the Stanley Cup run. You know, we saw it at the start of that next year, the year after they won the Stanley Cup, the first month or so, he was one of the best players in the league. And then it's just kind of been a steady kind of decline from there. There was the drug suspension, you know, handed out by the IIHF, and then the NHL gave him a couple, you know, three games. The talent is undisputable. I mean, it's there. I mean, you can't say it's not there. I went to watch an informal skate yesterday at in Arlington, Virginia, and he's still skating around guys like they're not even there at 29 years old. I mean, like, he still can be a dominant player. It's just, like you said, I mean, things have gone off the rails. And then last year there was, you know, he got COVID twice. I mean, you never want to blame a person for getting sick in the middle of a global pandemic, but no one else in the Capitals got it twice. Right. You know, he's part of a group of players that got the team fined $100,000 for breaking protocol. He got suspended later in the year for missing a team meeting. I mean, there were just, there are just things that are always seem to be happening with him that, you know, led to a summer of rumors of, you know, is he going to be traded? Is he going to be dealt? I mean, obviously nothing has come to fruition. I still think that's something to keep an eye on. You know, as we get into the season, I think the Jack Eichel situation might be holding up the center market a little bit in terms of trades. And I used the word sad earlier. I mean, look, when I say sad, I mean, that's probably for Capitals fans because the guy's got so much talent. I mean, he's a guy who should be 80, 90, 100 points. And he doesn't get there. And, you know, he has these games where it looks like he's broken through and, you know, he's on track. And then he goes quiet for several games. And then he's not playing in the third period after a turnover. And you're like, oh, here we go again. I mean, you know, enigmatic is a word that gets used a lot in our sport. I mean, he really is a tough guy to figure out. He's wired a little differently. I don't know how else to explain it. He's wired a little differently than the guys who are just driven to be the best they can every single day. I'm not sure that's him. You know, they hired Peter Laviolette a couple of years ago to kind of get through to him, and it looked like midway through last year they were having a breakthrough. He hadn't been playing late in games. His ice time was down. He had a sit-down meeting with Laviolette. He started playing in the third period, started getting defensive zone face-offs, started getting trusted with more ice, and then, you know, gets COVID again, misses the start of the playoffs, misses a team meeting, benched for a game, and then, you know, we are where we are. But I'll tell you this, he's the linchpin to this team. When this team is dominant, when they won that Stanley Cup, it's because they went Nicholas Backstrom, Evgeny Kuznetsov, and Lars Eller, 1-2-3 down the middle. And you guys in Pittsburgh know what kind of fits that gives the opposing team when you've got three strong centers. It's a game changer, but he's got to get back to that elite level if this team wants to punch through one more time.
One of the parallels that the Penguins and Capitals have been on parallel tracks kind of in recent years. One thing that the Penguins have that I'm curious about whether it's this true with the Capitals is that Pittsburgh doesn't have many high-quality prospects in the organization because they traded away so many early-round draft choices and things like that when they were in win-now mode, which it seems like they still are. Is the same true of Washington, or do they have some kids who could step in this year?
Dave, winter is coming. Winter is coming for both franchises, unfortunately. I mean, and you can't really blame the general manager. I mean, Brian McClellan was trying to and has been and still is trying to keep that championship window open as long as he can. And what that means is, that means dealing second and third round picks at the deadline every year for 7 or 8 years to go get what you need. Sometimes parting with a first rounder, and when you do that, it's harder to restock your farm system. And you know, the Capitals' farm system is probably bottom third. I mean, there are some players coming along. You know, Connor McMichael, 2019 first rounder, looks like he's going to be a stud. You know, is he going to be a first line center who puts up 100 points? Maybe not, but you know, he's going to be a very good player. They've got a couple of young defensemen, one of whom is going to be on the team this year, Martin Ferravari, Slovakian smooth skating two-way defenseman. He's going to come in and play on the left side of the blue line. 21 years old. We got another Russian, Alex Alexiev. Big defenseman. He's going to be here sooner rather than later. So they've got some players, but they don't really have any game changers. I mean, McMichael might be a game changer, but they don't have a ton of them, which is why I said winter is coming, because when Ovi and Backstrom are done, I'm not so sure what that transition is going to look like. I think it might be a tough, harsh transition for a few years as they build back up.
Well, Tarik, we've talked a lot about Lions of Winter. You are not a Lion of Winter. You're just really stretching out, and we look forward to seeing you this year, not only with your fine work at the Athletic, but also best of luck with your new endeavor at Turner fans will be watching, looking for your stories, and you're on the glass, at the glass, in the glass, whatever you want to call it. So all the best, and we certainly hope to have you on during the course of the season. For Tariq Al-Bashir, for Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed, and that's it for this edition of the 66 to 87 podcast.